Hi, it's Alan Carrington again, and through the marvels of modern technology, I'm sitting in Adelaide, South Australia, and I'm talking to Ken Sparrow again, who's in Philadelphia. I'm cold this end. Ken, how's the weather over there?
Wet and hot.
Ken, this is the third podcast we've done together, or third episode we've done together. And of course, we're talking about one of our favourite subjects, and that's simulations and immersive learning. What is, as you've been tracking with me on this pedagogy wheel, this learning and teaching model that I developed last year, it's gone, I think I'd be safe in saying, viral. We've had close to 27,000 downloads of the posters in the last 5 weeks, and people are talking about the apps being connected to the Blooms. They're talking about SAMR model, which is how to get the best out of the technology, but not a lot of people are talking about the core, the really central thing on this wheel, which is to do with graduate attributes, capabilities, motivation, and engagement. And it's almost a no-brainer to me, and I'm sure it is to you too, that that's where immersive learning lives the best. Can you talk to us about how you see situational learning working to engage students and how it can address motivation and then how it can work its way out through the grids of the wheel?
Sure. It's a great, you know, the both from a visual perspective and conceptually, the pedagogy wheel is a wonderful presentation of these ideas, and it's very consistent with the experience design approach that utilizes simulation. And really it all begins with, you know, I call it, we talk about it as engagement, but that's what drives motivation from a learning perspective. If we have a motivated learner, then we have more flexibility with which to provide them whatever content. So in whatever way we format it, the more motivated they are, the less context we need to provide because they're motivated. It's really for the students that aren't motivated that we really need to design, that we really need to focus on how do we make sure that they become motivated. And the way to do that, I believe, is starts with engagement. How do we engage them? How do we get them excited? How do we get them interested? How do we get them focusing on whatever the learning opportunity is, that they view it, there's something in it for them? Because that helps them be motivated, whether it's if they believe learning is important, if they want to have fun, if they want to achieve some level of outcome, a skill level, whatever the case may be, wherever motivation is coming from, we need to engage them. And from the simulation or experience or immersive learning type of approach or situational approach, using the story baseline as the vehicle to derive engagement through storytelling can be very, very compelling. And you, so,
yeah,
sorry,
you,
go ahead.
No, you mentioned fun. I think we're getting close to gaming here, are we?
Not necessarily. I mean, you can have fun in a sim too. You know, the whole difference, again, I think we've talked about this, the difference that I see between games and simulations is simply context. Is it alternate reality versus alternative reality? Are we engaged in an activity that could be our application, or are we off in a fantasy world, in a game environment in which we're dealing with the issues, but we're dealing with it in an other space? But both can engender fun. I mean, if you recall the issue of emotional engagement as a key vehicle for facilitating learning, that the emotional aspect, that which fires in the brain to get people to move from short-term content, to move from short-term to long-term memory, can be fired by any emotion, and why not have fun with it?
Yeah, and, you know, we talked yesterday just briefly about, you know, the idea that graduate attributes and capabilities are kind of way beyond the classroom and that they got to start somewhere else, and home would be a great place to start. But tell me, do you think that simulations are a good place to test this sort of stuff, those values and attributes?
I think it's wonderful. I mean, the thing that is about, the way you'd measure these things is in context, right? It's not something that they're going to come in and all of a sudden learn perseverance, or they're not going to suddenly come in and, you know, learn what from errors or from experience. What does that mean to have energy and passion and enthusiasm? I mean, these are the kinds of things that you observe. These are behaviors. And so the question is, you can't necessarily, it's difficult to, I can tell you about them or teach you about them, but I'm not going to engender them in your actions, in your behavior. However, if I put you into a situation in which, and I can keep it as a simple branching, relatively simple branching story, in which I'm creating a context that's realistic, and assuming that I've got you engaged, I can give you options that would demonstrate by your choice, they're equally good options, but they demonstrate different biases. They demonstrate different behavior. They demonstrate different preferences. They could be higher energy or lower energy. They could be one that's perseverance or one that's lacking patience. And through that kind of approach, I'm actually demonstrating in a context. And it also, you know, part of the challenge, so I'm demonstrating, I'll come back to that point in 1 second. I'm able to demonstrate, I'm able to measure whether or not they're, what's coming out through their behavior. Because that's ultimately what we need to have leverageable. That's what we need to see manifest in other similar situations. But this is what the simulation allows us to do. The other aspect is that unlike instruction, no matter how good the instruction is going to fundamentally be linear. A lot of these issues cannot be unpacked from each other. They are linked. They are part of the same big picture. And so even though I can instruct them in this list of 15, I can actually present scenarios that may capture 5 or 6 of them at the same time. They may be manifestations of the issues, maybe some more than others within that grouping. But several of these will manifest in situations that they will face, or whether it's the interdisciplinary action of co-delivering content from different disciplines around a particular issue, or whether or not it is a situation in which these issues, these behaviors, certainly for the older classes, would manifest. And so I want you thinking about, because there's going to be trade-offs here. I may have to give of one in order to succeed more in the other, which means I also need to prioritize, which means I need to decide where am I biased relative to where I want to elevate and where am I okay with degrading a little bit of my scoring. And so being able to take some of the elements that we've talked about that are really the core underpinnings of what makes simulation so valuable and dealing with the attributes and capabilities, these are the kinds of things. I mean, if this is what employers are looking for, this is in day-to-day activities. They want to see these behaviors manifest. And the way to do that more successfully, I believe, is through the scenario-based, through the story-based or experience-oriented applications that help to demonstrate the actions as opposed to, quote-unquote, teach them.
Do you think that this works? I mean, you're nailing it in my head anyway. You're nailing it, and hopefully in the listener who are going to wrestle with this, I'm sure that I'm having to wrestle with it. Tell me, does it work in the K-12 space? Because it seems to work pretty well in a higher education space as they're walking out into the marketplace for employment. But what about with the little people?
I think absolutely. I think that the opportunity, you know, kids are certainly going to be more apt to be grabbed, as it were, from the engagement perspective by a story. So fundamentally, you have a lot of flexibility. Now, there may be more game aspects to this than a simulation per se. But as we've talked about in the past, when you think about things like history, for instance, and you want to teach history, but, you know, and these are going to be not for the K side, but more from probably the middle school up, and use this as an example. And then we can extrapolate, or the listeners can extrapolate as well. But if we think about teaching history, I can tell you all about what it was like in ancient Greece. And I can tell you what it was like in other cultures and other timelines. But one of the things that may be more compelling would be to have you live that way to some degree. And if I can do that in a scalable way, so not one that takes a whole lot of virtual world kinds of things. But if I can create a story in which you take over the life of a citizen in ancient Greece, you're a member of the Republic, what does that mean? And so if I capture a month in the life, a year in the life of that character and allow you to live it, in the background, I will have a scorecard that reflects the norms of the time. So I don't want you thinking about what you would do based on 21st century values or 21st century norms. That's not appropriate. You need to be living the life the way they lived their lives and understand what it meant to be a citizen at that time.
Tell me, you've introduced the idea of a scorecard. Now, are we talking about a rubric? What's a scorecard?
Yes, in essence, it's a rubric. It is. These are the core elements that you want to see. These are the observable elements, the behaviors, the areas of the attributes, as it were, that you want to see demonstrated. And because simulation is at its most powerful in an issue that is contextual, that requires thinking, that isn't obvious, and it's not something that you can follow a recipe to do. In other words, that there are trade-offs that exist there. And so the scorecard would be a representation of what are those trade-offs. So if I'm a citizen in Greece, there may be some issues of wealth, there may be some issues of health, there may be some issues of family, there may be some issues of job, of employment, so to speak. There may be some issues of ranking in the society where I reside. These are the kinds of things that we want people to consider when you hear about stories, about actions of your regular people, your heroes, your anti-heroes, things that people did. It's important for them to appreciate what made that so and what drove them to make those kinds of decisions, because for us to think about it in terms of our 21st century, it's really kind of, we're disconnected from it.
Okay, so what I think you're saying is that, for example, that the 15 items that are mentioned on the pedagogy wheel in the core as graduate attributes that have come from research from industry, they're the sort of things to consider in a scorecard. Is that right?
That is correct. And in fact, I would extend that into, so looking at on the grid, so moving that into the puzzle of motivation, autonomy, mastery, and purpose would also be items that you might incorporate as part of, because you can demonstrate autonomy based on decisions that you would make. So when you're deciding on, in addition to the attributes, but I do think that, listening to the TED Talk by Dan Pink and how he sets that up, that there's clear that this is the way, if you're trying to help people to see the power of these elements and you want people to experience them so they can take them and work with them, move them forward in their lives, then the simulation would be a wonderful way to have that be demonstrated. And then through the scorecard to demonstrate it, through the feedback to reinforce it, through the storyline where they can experience the positives and negatives associated with doing it in this way, all of those things lend themselves to creating a very rich experience that now is resident in their experience portfolio that they can draw upon when they face similar kinds of situations in real life.
Okay, now, that's awesome. Now, am I right in that these might be dumb questions, but I'm sure there's some listeners out there thinking the same as me, so I'm going to ask them. But when you talk about a scorecard, that means you weight the answers, the choices they make? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So they
go on. And it doesn't, and you can, this gets into a whole other question of whether you're using simulations for assessment or for development. I'm going to assume development. So yes. They're weighted by whatever bias you want to have. So you can have, if you're trying to reinforce a message, then you would weight that scorecard item more because it calls attention to it when the student is looking at their scores. Okay. And you can reinforce that through the feedback.
We've now introduced probably about another 3 episodes that we should be doing. So we'll come back to that. But in the time frame or the time left, so to speak, to make this a really good, tight podcast episode, how does one get started, Ken? I'm going to put up onto the blog a copy of that job aid, that's that fantastic four-page tool or document that's at the end of your book, Scenario-Based E-Learning, which we link to the site. But how do you get started? What does an educator do to try this out for the first time?
Okay, well, if you do read it, recognize that this was written in a business context, not necessarily directly for educational context. So there may be a little bit of translation that would need to be done, but it's directly applicable, but some of the language may be a little different. So the first step is to, in a business context, is to identify the business problem that you're creating an application for. You're creating an experience around to improve something. So what is the business problem? Typically, a company would be looking at improving efficiency, improving profitability, decreasing defects, increasing the sales per person, whatever the case may be. Now, in a educational context, this may be the discipline inside of which we're trying to build math skills. We're trying to, computational skills. We're trying to improve writing skills. We're trying to improve however you define that. So this could be, this could get into some of the Bloom's taxonomy in terms of identifying learning objectives. So that could play in here. But that kind of provides the frame inside of which we want to then go and create. So we really kind of need to first create a bubble, as it were, inside of which we're going to kind of, we want to be able to limit, so to speak, what it is we're going to focus on. Because obviously there's so much stuff, we need to give ourselves focus. So that provides the initial focus. The second step is then in that vein, what is the desired experience we want people to have? So if we're thinking about, in a history example, I want these students to experience what it was like to be whatever, to be a citizen. I want them to experience what it's like to roam the plains. I want them to, whatever the case may be, what is it that I want people to be able to do? What is the experience I want them to have from beginning to end? I want them to start and end. What is that experience? Because again, that's where they're going to both learn from. And it's also going to be inside of which we're going to be able to apply which of the attributes apply to that experience. We'll be able to get some clarity relative to that by defining to some degree, right, this experience that we want students to have. And recognize that this is very iterative. So you never need to be locked in to get this down. So you start it and you iterate. And it's beautiful. It's a wonderful opportunity if you have somebody who you can knock these ideas around with. Because as I think we've talked about, creating is always very intimidating. And starting with that blank sheet of paper is very difficult to do for most people. On the other hand, everybody's a critic. So if you have thick enough skin to be able to share your ideas with a colleague, and they can tell you, nope, that's absolutely terrible. But they can give you some insight as to why they believe that. Now, they may be wrong, but they can at least give you some pointed insight that you can utilize to enhance your development processes. Then step three, yep, is the timeline. So if I'm having this experience, I obviously don't want to have, although you can be very extended, generally you're going to carve out a realistic period of time. Whether it's a day in the life, a week in the life, maybe even a year in the life, depending on the nature of the experience, but really to carve out, to provide some, now we're getting to some more details in the context inside of which this experience takes place, because what we need to do is create the environment. And so the timeline is going to help us to define, which is going to come a little bit later, the characters we're interacting with, the setting that it's taking place in. All of these things are going to be critical to establishing the story aspect, and also gives us the wherewithal to incorporate the teachable elements in the scenario, because it's through these interactions that we can have the attributes, whether it's the graduate attributes, whether it's the other aspect that Dan Pink brings up. These are going to manifest inside of the setting and with the characters and components that are embedded there. Then what does success look like? Here's where we get into the scorecard issue. So we've now defined the experience. We've got a sense of the timeline. So as we think about what is getting through this experience successfully, what would that mean? How would I describe that? How would I measure it? If you get from one end to the other and you are, so again, going back to the history example, you have increased wealth, you have a bigger home, you have more children, you have an elevated status in the community. You know, what are the things that we would want to observe as being successful? Or alternatively, what does failure look like? Because clearly one of the things in the attributes is learning from failure, and that's absolutely an opportunity inside of this kind of setting. And maybe that's the more compelling because people are failing. So they'll recognize failure right away. And what we're trying to do is move them beyond that. So what does failure mean? How do you define failure? Because if you can lay out what those failure items is, and is it all failing, or are there some positive aspects and vice versa? If it's all success, are there some negative elements that would be trade-offs? This would be, in essence, the scorecard that you would want to capture, because every scenario would affect the set of attributes in some way, shape, or form.
Right. And five? Is that four? That's four, right? Five?
That's four. Five is then to think about, and this goes back to the issue of the characters, so I foreshadowed that. You know, where are the conflicts? Are there situations that are going to be in conflict? Are there characters that are going to be in conflict? Are there decisions that are going to be in conflict? What are the core elements that are creating some of the context that makes this so rich in terms of the blending of, or the synthesis of these various elements as they come to light. So that's going to be, you want to identify some of those areas that would add that depth and richness to the plot line, so to speak. And then you really want to just put all that together and tell the story. So it doesn't have to be, you might be thinking about an example of somebody doing it. Just tell that story to get started. Even though we are ultimately potentially going to branch it, and we can have complex branching or simple branch, you know, all of that stuff comes later. It all begins with the story. So if you can tell that, if you can go and tell that experience from beginning to end without any thought about branching, because we'd come back to that, but that's where it all begins. And if you can capture that, even in a draft format, that is the raw materials that can be then formed into a rich experience.
Ken, you have been talking about six steps, which are, wow, they're terrific. Tell us about this job aid that's now available on the blog site. This is a four-page tool for a learning designer to use. How does it work?
Well, very simply, it is a set of prompts that really kind of works you through the whole narrative that I just went through verbally. But it does it organizes a set of questions as prompts to get people to either the authors, the educators themselves, or if you're working with another subject matter expert. So it gives you something to work with yourself or with somebody else. And it does it through two different perspectives. Because again, when we talk about this idea of that blank sheet of paper and getting started, sometimes, you know, I don't think that way. Simulation is not a science. It's really just a way of organizing your thinking. And so if I'm not comfortable organizing yet in that way, this provides two different approaches that reflect different styles. One is more analytical and one is more storytelling, more story oriented. And so depending on which is more comfortable for you, it'll give you that set of prompts. They're not either or, you can use both, but it really does allow for this opportunity to think through the issue, think through the objectives that you're looking to achieve, think through the experience you want your students to have, and then build it accordingly.
Tell me, what sort of feedback are you getting from the coalface of simulation design? Are people finding this very helpful?
They find it extremely helpful. And in fact, you know, we've gotten very positive feedback both from the authors that have done it themselves and also the subject matter experts that we've interviewed. And we use this as an interviewing tool because it helps it. You know, subject matter experts are often, you know, we have difficulty with them because they don't really know how to help us. And a lot of people get frustrated with that. But really, it's because the subject matter experts don't know how to help. And this helps to give them something to anchor themselves around to provide really good insight and feedback from their areas of expertise.
I think you're saying that this tool will help subject matter experts engage in the simulation development process. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, saying that exactly. And that through that engagement, it's a wonderful outcome is that they then are tremendous resources in the future as you roll it out for the students. Because they're so engaged by it, because it's an area of passion for them. They're motivated because you're talking about stuff that's exciting to them.
Ken, this has been a fantastic episode, and I'm so excited that it's going to go out to such a large audience. Let's just hope they are motivated, engaged enough to sit and listen to this. I've been talking to Ken Sparrow. He is the senior strategist for the Regus Company in Philadelphia. He's become a friend. We've spent time together in Texas in a conference, etc. Ken, thank you for your time, and let's do it again.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah.